Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I would like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. Every other week, we have Alan Mackey. He joins our program, and he adds a lot to this program, very insightful information and thoughts, what it should be in our society, what it should be like if we had working people, a society that was based on a democratic socialist system, and also an economy that was designed to work for working people. And as we see in this economy, it doesn't work that way. Today what we are going to be talking about is the media. And we can see when we turn on the television in the morning and the evening, when we look at the internet, we can see that there is a great amount of interference and also, I should say, just right off say, propaganda that we're receiving from much of the media sources that are available to us. And Alan, once again, I'd like to welcome you to our program today.
Well, thanks for having me, Stuart.
And Alan, what we're talking about today is the power of propaganda in the media under capitalism. And as many of our listeners have seen from the posting that we had, is the news really news? And over the years, we can see that the news now is nothing more than just a joke. I see people, my wife in particular, she'll wake up sometimes in the morning. She say, "I'm going to go down and turn on the television and catch a little bit of news." And when I see what she's looking at, is anything but news. They're rehashing stuff. They have supposedly news, weather, sports, entertainment. It's more entertainment. It's more sports, some weather, but it's anything but news, weather, and sports. Alan, where is the news?
Well, I think if people really want to read the news, they have to read the things that people like you and me are writing about what's actually going on in the lives of working people. And when you listen to the news, how often do you hear about the specific things that people are having to endure as they work their life through poverty and unemployment, and you know, their thoughts on wars and racism? You know, we don't get that from the news media. If we want to get news like that, we have to talk to one another, and we have to become involved in organizations that are helping to spread you know, the ideas from a point of view, a working class point of view. We're supposed to be talking about, I guess, propaganda today. And to me, you know, I've been called a propagandist myself. I don't consider that a terribly bad word. However, you know, like you pointed out to me today, the United States government is now engaged in a propaganda campaign of its own. We used to get, well, not us so much, but the peoples of the world used to get their views, and they still get their views from outfits like the Voice of America, spreading all these ideas about how we live in a country with streets paved with gold, essentially. So you get all these
right.
People that want to come here, and they find out that things aren't what they've been made out to be real quick. And so, you know, that's part of the propaganda that we're being subjected to now in this country. Our government, it used to be illegal for the government to be engaged in propaganda itself with the American people. And now, like you pointed out, with the National Defense Authorization Act, there's a provision in there where they are now allowed to propagandize the American people. And it doesn't
right.
make any difference whether it's the truth or a bunch of lies. And the thing is, we've been getting a lot of that. They say it's something new. Personally, I don't see it as being all that new, because the COINTELPRO program that was used by the FBI to smear a whole bunch of people in this country was essentially a propaganda campaign to undermine the left for decades. So, you know, we have had a lot of this kind of propaganda in the past, but now we're going to be inundated with propaganda from the military-industrial complex and all these other government agencies that are nothing but mouthpieces for various industries.
And basically, when you turn on, I guess you could, sometimes they don't even call it a news on certain stations. They'll just say, "Welcome to our morning show." It's not news. They just call it a show. And in the evening, they're covering the latest fires and accidents. Sometimes there's some very important news that we have seen just recently about Bradley Manning and what was going on with the trial, and we can see how much of that is diluted, the importance of that, because of other things that are being covered. And I'm not saying it's not a place for those things, Alan, but when we're covering a fire on top of a building, in such and such a block or in this corner, we have a fire. It just started. We have two units on the scene to put it out. You know, well, Alan, that could be in a metro area such as Los Angeles County, 11 million people. In Southern California, you're talking about close to, you know, well over 16 million people, but the whole world is focused on a fire on top of a building, a structure, that the fire department is already there doing their job. Why is this important that you need to let 16 million people know that the fire department is doing their job?
Well, the whole thing with the so-called news media in this country now is more to get people's attention away from the real problems that people are having to endure, and anything they can do to sensationalize things and distract people. You know, that's what they do. And a lot of the news is nothing but advertisements for business and industry. The news media literally just rewrites press releases from all these businesses and industries. You know, they've admitted that for years, especially with healthcare. And they come up with all these things about there's been new advances in fighting cancer and heart and lung diseases and everything. And all that it is a promotion for some foundation, essentially, so that people send them donations.
Right, exactly. And then, Alan, here in the evening, on the spoon-fed news that you get on CNN and Fox News and MSNBC, CBS, NBC, ABC, the evening news and world report. We don't see anything that's going on in the world. But they call
nothing.
It the evening news and world report. Again, I ask you, what's with that?
Well,
it's not a report of what's going on in the world.
The only time we get any news about what's going on in the rest of the world is when people in different countries rise up in rebellion against the oppression that Wall Street's subjecting them to, and then you have a war, either a civil war or a war against the United States. And then those countries, they become headlines in the news. But, you know, the American people know very little about what's going on in most countries of the world. We have some 200 sovereign countries in the world today. And what
right.
do we really know about how people are
nothing.
Living in those countries? No, nothing. And this is terrible, and yet they talk about how we have this great free media. I lived in Canada for 10 years, and they have the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And I'll tell you, the Canadian people, well, there's a lot to be desired in the CBC, but the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation keeps people much more informed about how people live in the rest of the world than what we would ever get in this country.
And, Alan, you know, I just want to touch back on that just recently, as you mentioned, that the U.S. Congress actually repealed that propaganda ban. And people don't understand, and our listeners need to understand how that tied into what took place with the passing of the National Defense Authorization Act. The one day, on the 31st of last year, on the last day of the year, the president signed into law the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA.
Right.
And within days, Congress banned this legislation and repeal the propaganda ban, where now, you know, a total end to transparency, where the government can look into what you're doing and feed you all the information, disinformation, through propaganda. Alan, where do you see the correlation and the tie between the signing of the National Defense Authorization Act and repealing that propaganda ban as it applies to any type of transparency that we could even think of?
I don't think it's coincidental that this came as an attachment to the National Defense Authorization Act, because it's going to be the military-industrial complex that's going to make the most use out of this new authorization to use propaganda in this country from a government point of view. You know, the government for sure will have an agency set up now to propagandize the American people about how we need an arms race, and we need to continue to with this militarization, and they're going to use this to create all kinds of lies to get us into more wars. They're going to create more lies to defend the Israeli killing machine, and
right.
I think that's going to be one of the main emphasis will be on the U.S. relation with Israel and what is going on in Israel, and we're going to be fed all kinds of lies now as official government propaganda.
And Alan, in most recent years, and I think most Americans can see this when it took place, is that right after September the 11th, all of a sudden, you know, we were talking about the weapons of mass destruction, and it was continuously where we heard this every day, that selective news, that this was an evil empire and they needed, you know, they had weapons of mass destruction throughout the country and hidden in various mosques and like this. And then we see that that was a lie. But Alan, Iraq, if we look in recent years, Iraq is a good example of how that type of propaganda was used on the American public, and Congress basically went along with it. The U.S. courts and the world courts went along with that, the Hague Court. Alan, when we look at propaganda, we're using it to go to wars with countries. We use it in Libya. And as you just mentioned, now we're using that same technique to in the Middle East with Israel and Iran, and we're using propaganda just to build up the military-industrial complex around the world.
Yeah, and I think that we'll probably be seeing a lot of that come into play around the anniversaries of the atom bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know, for years the government has sort of stayed at a distance and justifying this, but I think we'll see more and more the United States government become involved in justifying the atom bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
I want you to talk a little bit about that, because that in itself, Alan, is extremely important. We could see propaganda. I mean, let me ask you, even this government, and I'm asking you this, was it imperative that we use the atom bomb on those two cities during the end of World War II?
Well, I don't think it was, and I think, you know, Gar Alperovitz is probably the foremost authority on this, and he has done a lot of research, and my own dad, who was fighting in the Philippines at the time against Japanese imperialism, said that, you know, it wasn't necessary to use the atom bomb against the Japanese. And I think it's more and more it's coming to the fore that the only reason Truman used the atom bomb against the Japanese was as a club over the head of the Soviets to try and hold the Soviets back and to try and hold back people's movements from people taking over their own governments, like in Korea. You know, it was meant as a threat against the entire peoples of the world that if you get out of line, we're going to use these atom bombs against you because we're the only ones that have them. And,
well, why did they select the Japanese as opposed to the Germans? Because it was available even toward the end of the war when, you know, we were marching toward Berlin. And personally, I don't think it should have ever been used. But it seemed like it was something that they needed to test out. and they tested it out on one race as opposed to another. As when you look at, do we test it out on a black or do we test it out on a Japanese? Well, we're going to test it out on the black. Do we test it out on a nation of whites or a nation of Japanese? Well, we're going to test it out on the Japanese. But it shouldn't have been tested in the first place. And then it came under the guise that we were saying that, you know, we need to end this war, and it's going to be, the invasion is going to cost all sorts of fatalities and lives. And then we went and snuffed out hundreds of thousands of lives. Alan, we were using propaganda then.
The propaganda of racism, and racism has always been one of the main arms of, forms of propaganda in this country that the government and business and industry and Wall Street have used. And, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that, this was used against the Japanese people and not the German people, for the simple reason that they had demonized the Japanese people using racism all throughout the war.
Right.
And that they wanted to assure that, you know, this racism was going to be enforced. And
right.
the second time they threatened to use that atom bomb was in Korea. The third time they threatened to use the atom bomb was against the people of Vietnam. You had people
right.
like Gerald Ford, who at the time was a congressman, calling for nuclear weapons to be used against the Vietnamese people. And,
right, exactly.
You know, you had leading generals calling for using nuclear bombs against the Vietnamese people. And, you know, we've got to take this into consideration when we fight this government propaganda, that we have to fight racism at the same time. And, you know,
it ties together.
Yeah, exactly, because U.S. Policy, foreign policy, has been tied very closely to racism, just like domestic policy is. And we can't get away from that, so we've got to confront it, and we've got to expose that. And we got to expose the role of racism in U.S. foreign policy, just like we have to expose the role of racism to divide people right here in the United States to keep us from getting together to solve our problems, whether it's health care or unemployment. You know, they use this weapon of racism all the time. And then, actually, the racism is sort of like a, you know, it is a weapon. It's not sort of like a weapon, but it is a weapon that they use.
It is a weapon.
People. Yeah, and they use it against the American people. And this propaganda campaign that we're going to be exposed to now is going to carry a very heavy dose of racism. And the racism will come by way of demonizing people in other countries. And it'll just happen to be that those people that are being demonized are people of color.
Right, exactly. Ellen, you know, I'm just going to get into a few things, how propaganda, how the news media use propaganda, because we can't underestimate the powerful impact that television has. Every household, if someone's living under a roof, they got a television. If they're many people, if they're homeless, they still have a television. So it's a very powerful tool. They get information now just by looking at their cell phones. But when you look at much of the news that we receive on a regular basis, just recently we had the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman case, which was a very important case because it shows, again, as you just mentioned, racism. But in a criminal court, and we can see now as a results of that, is that by the selection, what we were talking about last week, the selection of a jury process, you're going to get your desired results. But we had Trayvon Martin, and the whole nation was focused on, was Zimmerman going to be found guilty or innocent? So we were focused on that. But, Alan, there were a lot of other important things in the news, that headline news, they were focused on that trial 24/7. CNN,
right.
Half of their broadcasting was on that. Fox News jumped on, MSNBC. It got to the point where every station you turned to, they were focused on that. And, Alan, we had other important news to focus on, such as Bradley Manning. And I want you to explain the importance that we should know something, we should hear about what was going on with that most important trial, and we didn't hear about that because they were focusing on the Trayvon Martin case, which I'm not trying to say it was not important, But if it's news, you cover the news. You don't select what you want to present to the public. But how important was it to present what was taking place in that trial with Bradley Manning?
Well, what wasn't really reported in the news media is what Bradley Manning was arrested for, and that's exposing war crimes. And this
good
is something
point.
That news media has completely denied the American people any information about. During the Vietnam War, we saw a lot of these war crimes on television, and that created massive opposition to the Vietnam War. And the people in power in this country, the ruling class, the Wall Street people, learned an important lesson, and that was that never again will they show the war crimes being committed by U.S. troops on foreign soil. And the information that Bradley Manning was trying to expose us to was what all these war crimes are that are taking place right here and now at the hands of the U.S. Military in a foreign country. So this is a story that they really don't want to be told, in my opinion, when it comes to Bradley Manning.
Right. And what about Edward Snowden? Same thing. I mean, use that trial, and it's probably the same situation. But all of a sudden, like I said, the Martin Zimmerman case, that was most important. At the same time, you had that. But one of the things that I could see, Alan, there was a mounting support across the nation of people on both sides saying that they thought that we should not have been pursuing him into other countries to apprehend him. And the more support that I could see that was happening nationwide, the less support you saw, the less you heard talk about that on the news. Well, the news on television and in the newspapers. And even today, we don't hear too much about that. And just recently, something which they didn't focus on too much, where they were saying that Russia was going to offer asylum. But even that, they didn't want to talk about that much. But
no, they don't want to talk about what's really at issue either the Bradley Manning trial or the Snowden affair. And the real issue is that the American people are not getting the truth about what the government is doing. And much of what the government activities that's being exposed now is the United States government is lying to the American people about what they're doing all over the world and even here in our own country. And this is what they do not want to come out. They don't want it to come out that this government lies and lies and lies. Because if that comes out, the government has no more credibility at all. And
right.
When a government has no credibility, what do people do? They have a revolution.
Right, and, exactly.
That's what this country is very afraid of. And what they're going to be doing now with this so-called propaganda is they're going to be taking what they did under the COINTELPRO program, what J. Edgar Hoover instituted and all of these people in the National Security Administration. They're going to be taking this to a new level, and they're going to be repressing, we're going to have political repression to a massive scale in this country. It's not just going to be the Bradley Mannings or the Edward Snowdens. They're going to accuse all kinds of people of all kinds of terrorist activity. I was reading just the other day, I think it was in Tennessee, where some public official from the county health department where people were concerned about their water, he said, if you keep calling us about your water not being clear and everything, you could be considered terrorist because it's like you're filing false reports. Yeah, and he said,
I remember that.
There's a big scandal going on. People want this guy fired, and every time that things like this come out, people are insisting that these public officials be fired, and this is what they don't want. Because these public officials are appointed by the Democrats and Republicans, and this is the way they use their authority. So this is the way, all these so-called anti-terror measures are going to be used, not to stop any kind of terrorism. They're going to be used against the American people for what they say. The words that you express will be words that are viewed as terrorism by the United States government, and they'll be trotting us off to trials one by one by one. And just, they did this during McCarthyism. They did it during the Deeds Committee way back in 1938. and that's the way they smashed the Minnesota Farmer Labor Party, the real socialist Minnesota Farmer Labor Party. They subjected it to the Deese Committee, which, by the way, Martin Deese was a Democrat too. And you know, then we had the McCarthy witch hunts, and then Hubert Humphrey joined in with his Communist Control Act, another so-called liberal Democrat who was the main author of the Communist Control Act, and they demonized anybody that they deemed to be communist, including 15,000 school teachers here in this country who lost their jobs during this period, you know. And we're going to see more and more of this now that the government can conduct these propaganda campaigns, because what will happen is people will be speaking in opposition to what the government is saying, and the government will be saying, hey, you can't do that. You're aiding and abetting the terrorists. You know,
right.
This is what we're going to be facing, especially when it comes to the military-industrial complex. People that fight for peace are going to be deemed as terrorists. And we've seen this already with three people, one of whom is a Minnesotan, Mr. Obed from Duluth, Minnesota, who is now facing terrorism charges because they dripped a little blood and did a little graffiti at a nuclear facility down in, I think it was Tennessee. And the three of these people are now on, they're going to be facing sentencing in September, and they're, the United States Department of Justice, they went from trespass charges against these people and destruction of property, which is a petty misdemeanor, and they now they're viewing them as terrorists, and they're going to try and put them in jail for 30 or 40 years.
And then right away you become you once they find you guilty, you know, it's a felony, and as you mentioned, it's 30 to 40 years or longer.
Yeah, and once this happens, you're in the system, and it's almost impossible to get out. And we're seeing this with Bradley Manning. You know, we're seeing this with a number of other people, Leonard Peltier, Mumia. You know, almost the whole world knows that Mumia and Leonard Peltier are innocent people. And the FBI has used this power of propaganda to demonize these two people, that their only crime, so-called crime, was fighting for justice and standing up and speaking out. So the FBI decides to frame these people, just like they did with Bradley Manning, and they're doing with Edward Snowden. And, you know, we're going to have a whole slew of political prisoners now in this country.
Right. Now, what I see is a whole nation... the whole working class in this nation, they're becoming political prisoners. They just don't know it. You know, it's just like, you know, once you're in the cell and you have thousands of people in the same cell, then all of a sudden you feel comfortable. Well, I'm not the only one here. And that's the way it is in this country. I mean, we're becoming prisoners in our own country because of many of the laws that are coming down from Washington. But I'll just mention very briefly, we do have Alan Mackey.
Right.
Oh, go ahead. Finish your thought.
On the West Coast, you see the Coast Guard being used to try and break the strikes of the Longshore Union. And, you know, this is also part of propaganda because they feed the propaganda that, you know, we can't allow people to go on strike and disrupt the docks because, you know, it's against the national interest of this country. So therefore, the workers are demonized as some kind of terrorist, and the Coast Guard is called out to protect the grain cartels. You know, whoever heard of the federal government? There's been no violence or anything. Whoever heard of the federal government sending out a branch of the military to fight the workers that are on strike? You know, Obama did this on his own initiative, and, you know, we're going to be seeing more and more of that if they can call out the Coast Guard to... combat workers in the longshore docks. You know, what's to prevent them from doing the same thing in the steel industry here at the iron ore mines here in Minnesota, or the steel mills, which whatever still exists of the steel industry down in Pittsburgh or Ohio? You know, they're going to claim that everything is in the national interest, and they're going to
use they already trained in the Coast Guard
people.
They already trained in the Coast Guard where they can step in when it becomes martial law. I mean, they're already being trained for this. And American people don't even know this. That's what happens with propaganda when you start withholding information. People think everything is, you know, everything is hunky-dory. But, folks, wake up. You know, things have drastically changed, and you think everything is okay. Today we have Alan Mackey. He's joining our program once again on the Socialist Insight. And today we're discussing the power of propaganda and the media under capitalism. Is the news really news? And we can see it's not news, Alan. It's a joke.
No, it is. It's
entertainment. It's entertainment.
Yeah. And, you know, when we talk about propaganda, I think it's important to realize that, you know, what we're talking about is spreading ideas and information. These ideas and information, they could contain, they could be the truth, but more often than not, when we get ideas and information out of the United States government and the corporations and this whole military-industrial complex, what we get is, and it's hard for people to see through all this a lot of times because we don't have broad discussions in this country, but a lot of times they'll take a kernel of truth and weave it into a whole bunch of lies, so it becomes hard for people to decipher what is the truth and what is fact and what is fiction. And
mm-hmm.
you know, this is the kind of, when you have Hollywood and you have the Madison Avenue coming together and using propaganda, and a propaganda that's part of government policy to defend government policy, whether it's right or wrong, they're going to take a small kernel of truth and weave that into a bunch of lies to try and trick the American people into supporting, you know, more wars, more militarism. And people, they hope that people will overlook the fact that they're without jobs, living in poverty, the victims of racism, you know. And this is a very sad state of affairs that we're approaching in this country.
Now, as I mentioned, Alan, so often we see people because of the propaganda, when they, from time to time, if they do mention about something that's taking place around the world, most of the people in this country don't even know where those locations are on the globe. You'd be surprised, Alan. Just do a little random survey of people that you encounter on, from day to day, and ask, do you know where Afghanistan is? And you know, Alan, they don't know. They don't know. Here we're losing troops over there every day, and we don't even know where Afghanistan is.
Well, it's
Alan, that's
a
sad state of affairs right there.
It's worse than that, Stuart. I live here in Minnesota, and I talk to people about what's going on with the politics and the affairs up in Manitoba, which is our northern neighbor. And when I mention Manitoba, probably a good 40 to 50% of the people will ask me where Manitoba is.
Wow.
And they don't even know that it's a Canadian province that borders Minnesota. You know, this is a sad state of affairs.
And it shouldn't be like that. With the information that we have, it shouldn't be that way. Just recently, Alan, like I say, people I understand not knowing where something is on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean or the other side of the Pacific. But when you don't know what's going on in your own hemisphere, and just recently we saw the overthrow or the ouster, where they ousted President Fernando Lugo in Paraguay.
Yeah.
And that was important news, Alan. It was important news because you could see how the government, the U.S. government, how they had ties to the overthrow of that government. But, Alan, we didn't even hear anything about that on the local news. Nothing. Alan, it was important. It was important news. Here's the other thing is you ask people on the street, you talk to them about, you know, Paraguay. And they don't even know where the country is. Where
exactly.
is that?
Yeah,
when you talk
I
to
talk,
people about Brazil, Alan, some people, many people, don't. They say, well, I believe it's somewhere in South America. But, you know, they don't know if it's on the east or the west coast. They don't even know where it is. But, Alan,
exactly.
we have seen huge demonstrations down in Brazil where you have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating. You see it, demonstrations that are going on in Europe and throughout the world, but these things should be covered on the media. When you talk about the news and world reports, we should hear something about that. Alan, all of this is being covered up.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at just what's going on in the Caribbean, you know, with Jamaica and Grenada, and the island nations down there. Most Americans view these places as just some a nice tourist destination, lots of sun and nice oceans to go swimming in, and they know nothing about the living conditions of the people in any of these countries. And
exactly.
It's very, very sad. I was down in Freeport.
What about Haiti?
In Haiti. Haiti is a perfect example where the people are, you know, you've got...
What has happened since the hurricane?
Yeah, you got Bush and Clinton working together down in Haiti to help them set up all these sweatshops, taking advantage of the people that are in dire straits because of the hurricane, and they're using them as literally slave labor in these sweatshops down there, making all kinds of garments for us to wear up here. You know, they get a pittance down there for pay, and yet they bring those, you know, shirts and stuff up here, and they sell them for $30 and $40. And people have no understanding of what's taking place.
And Alan, when I look at, obviously most of us understand the relative position on the globe where Japan is, but recently with the tsunami where it severely damaged the plant, the nuclear plant down in Fukushima, and Alan, there's still a problem with that.
the problem hasn't gone away,
and now it's affecting the West Coast. It's affecting the West Coast, Alan. We're not even talking about this.
Major waters of the ocean are now so dangerously radioactive. Fish and stuff are dying. I just published an article from Reuters that says that there's an emergency situation at this plant. And, you know, for months now, we've been told that everything is under control, everything is okay. But
it's far from being under control.
It's not under control.
It's critical.
It's not going to be under control. And they can't find enough stupid people to go, no matter what they pay them, to go into that plant to do what has to be done to stop the leaks. I mean, who's going to put themselves in a position to go into a plant knowing that they're going to come out a living dead person? You know?
Right, exactly.
And,
I mean, you just know your days are numbered.
Yeah.
And so, Alan, when we see how propaganda is being used, we can see that it used influence and also is used to cover up. And what we can see is they get people turn on the news and they read the news and they become so distracted where they don't see the things that are most important to them. Alan, everybody, you know, they watch the Super Bowl, they watch the series, they watch golf. How is sports? I'm not into sports. Don't ask me anything about sports because I'll look ridiculous. But, Alan, how is sports used in a society? We saw it used with the Greeks and the Romans, and we saw it used, you know, during the time of Germany, you know, sports and propaganda was being used in. The Romans, they were the masters of propaganda, and they used the games to distract the public. But, Alan, how is... We have news, weather, sports, and entertainment, but how do you use entertainment? How do you use sports in a world that is full of propaganda?
Well, sports should be something that promotes peace and friendship among peoples, and it's not used that way. And it's used just to try and get people's minds off of the problems that they're confronting on a daily basis. We see... you know, football stadiums, basketball stadiums, baseball stadiums filled to capacity with people paying big money for tickets. But try and get that many people together to protest a war or to fight against poverty, and it's almost impossible to do. I think the last person to fill big stadiums was probably when Nelson Mandela came to this country. And people turned out and made, you know, large numbers of people turned out to fill baseball stadiums and everything to hear what he had to say. But how often do you get to hear what a man like Nelson Mandela has to say about fighting poverty? Yeah, you know, you very seldom get to hear it. you know, we got all kinds of people in this country working for peace, working for social justice. How often do you see those people on television or hear them on the radio? Not very often.
Right.
You know, myself, I work with casino workers that are trying to organize. There's some 2 million casino workers working in the Indian gaming industry, forced to work in these smoke-filled casinos at poverty wages. They have no rights under state or federal labor laws. Not one single radio or television station in this country has carried a single word about the working conditions of the people that are forced to work in these casinos. You know, that tells you something. 2 million people, and we don't know the kind of conditions that they're being subjected to and that they're being forced
exactly.
to work under. And yet we have politicians passing laws that have created this hideous industry where people don't have any rights under state or federal labor laws or anything else. And, you know, if people don't have access to the media to present their problems and concerns, you know, how are they supposed to work up movements in order to fight the injustices? And then they'll come out, the news media will come and say, I had one editor from a newspaper in Escanaba, Michigan. He said, tell me, call me, as soon as the police start to beat up some of your workers for going out on strike, and we will have news. You know,
that's the
way he viewed things, and that's the way most, you know, of the news media in this country views things. If there's something that can promote sensation, they will hone in on that. But it's very short duration. They won't even consider covering the day-to-day struggles of people for justice in any factory or any place, any other workplace in this country. You know, you have plants closing left and right. How often do you hear on television the effects that a plant closing will have on the lives of 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 workers who are going to lose their jobs and their families are going to suffer when these workers are forced to take jobs at poverty wages when they used to have good union jobs at real living wages? You know, you don't see the news media focused on things like that.
Alan, when I look at the setbacks of working people under this administration, the setbacks, working people in this country have been set back more than 150 years. It's all the way back to the 19th century now, and
sure.
people just don't realize it. Alan, when I look at when you talk about transparency, and that's what we were talking about, transparency in 2007 and 2008, you know, as president, he was going to have – Barack Obama was going to have a transparent government. And when you're saying, when we talk about the U.S. just recently repealing the propaganda ban, how can you have transparency and have propaganda at the same time? Because propaganda in itself, you're not really getting the information right.
No, well, Obama is the president now because he's a master of propaganda. He's a master of taking a kernel of truth and weaving it into a whole web of lies. And this is what Obama is going to be known for. And to give a man like Obama the leverage that now comes along with government having the ability to use government propaganda, I mean, what are the people going to be fed? You know, it's a sad state of affairs.
Well, the way I see it, if they've gotten this much leverage, and I'm talking about the powerful elite in this country, by saying that you're going to have your first black president, and now we have laid down for everything that has come down the pipe, now I guess the next step is, well, you're going to have your first woman president.
Yeah, exactly.
We're giving up our freedoms because we got our first black president. We're going to get our first white. I mean, we're going to get our first woman president, and we're giving up everything.
Exactly.
It's not worth it.
That's what Wall Street has intended all along. The Republicans never would have been able to carry out this program that the Democrats are pushing through. And it's taken a black president, it's going to take a white woman president in order to carry it out further. And, you know, we're going to be in a real mess, and we'll have no more rights. People will have to be careful what they say on the telephone. People have to be careful what they say out on a street corner if they're talking to a group of, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 people. they're going to be told that, you know, you can't congregate here and have discussions. And
that's Alan, you say four, five, or six people, you're going to have to watch what you're saying just to one person.
Exactly. And people are going to have, you know, already people are saying that they're careful what they say on the telephone now. And if people
right.
have to be so-called careful about what they say on the telephone talking to another person, I mean, what does this tell you about the state of democracy? If you're going to be careful what you say to one person, probably a friend on the telephone, are you going to stand up in front of a group of 2,000 people and speak your mind? You know, no.
Alan, we're going to touch on a few things. We have approximately 14, 15 minutes left, and I'm going to just, you know, cover how is propaganda being used in recent years. And I'm just going to shoot you a couple of few things, and then I just want you to elaborate a little bit on those things, okay?
Sure.
How has propaganda been used in recent years in regards to the economy and what we see on the news media and reading the newspapers? I mean, has the economy bounced back?
I don't believe that it has. You know, they have what they call this
the people
image.
In Detroit, they don't think it's bounced back.
No, I don't think any working class family believes that the economy has bounced back. For working people, it has definitely not bounced back. We see the people that live off of stocks and bonds doing pretty good, but that's probably going to be a short-term thing too. But they have this whole image that they want to create that the economy is getting better, and they push this idea every month now that fewer people are collecting unemployment. Well, that doesn't mean that more people have jobs. It means that fewer people are actually collecting unemployment. Many of those people, their unemployment has run out, so they're no longer even considered on the in the statistics. So, you know,
a wake-up call,
Alan.
This is one
way the government uses propaganda to lie.
Right. A wake-up call here in California. Some people have been unemployed for years, for 3, 4, and 5 years, and they still can't find work.
If you go to any Indian reservation in northern Minnesota, you'll find entire families who have been unemployed and not had a job for literally generations.
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 Alan, how has propaganda been used for the big one, war?
Well, I think that's sort of obvious. It should be obvious to most people. Propaganda has been used to demonize other peoples around the world based on race, based on religion. You know, we've seen the way that they've used propaganda to demonize all kinds of people around the world in order to go to war and to intervene in their countries. And whether it's based on race or they claim that the people don't have the intellectual capacity to solve their own problems, it's just nothing but a constant and perpetual campaign of propaganda. And if the propaganda were the truth, it would be one thing, but it's propaganda that's based on lies and falsehoods that's used to create these racist images of people abroad that they can't solve their own problems. We've seen this all over the world. South America, Latin America, Africa, Asia, you know, and we even see it. I lived in Canada for 10 years, and I saw it there where the American corporations use this propaganda in a powerful way that the Canadian people, that they don't have the ability to use their resources most effectively, and it takes these foreign American companies to come in and show them how to utilize their resources. And the problem is the people don't get the benefit of those resources. It's the Wall Street profiteers who benefit from that. So, you know, this is a whole propaganda campaign that's been used to prop up U.S. imperialism and capitalism and to justify it here in our own country and all over the world.
How has propaganda been used for immigration and the border? We need to enforce the border. They're taking our jobs. They're costing our economy, and we can see that they're not costing the economy. They're adding to the economy.
Yeah, on the one hand, we pounded into people's heads, people all over the world, that this is the greatest country in the world, and the streets are paved with gold, and everybody owns a home, everybody has a couple cars in the garage, and people believe this, so they want to come here. And when they come here to try and find a good life, you know, that all that they're subjected to is severe exploitation, and they never see the home. They never see the two cars in the garage. What they see is, you know, probably a rat-infested house in a ghetto, and that's to them, that becomes the reality of life, and then they begin to struggle against that, and right away they're demonized and treated as criminals.
Well, so, let me ask you something, Alan. Maybe you can help my thinking out on this. And I think immigration really goes along the lines of race. You know, if you're white, it's going to be a little easier for you to get into the country and to work and, you know, to live here. Look at many, since, you know, in recent years, I mean, we have almost some entire Russian communities now in this country. We saw right after Vietnam, if you go to Orange County, certain parts of Orange County, I mean, you can't read what's on the building, you know. But, I mean, entire communities now are, you know, are Vietnamese or Korean, entire Chinese communities. But let 20 blacks get on a boat trying to get from Haiti, they'll shoot the boat down in the water, you know.
Exactly.
If you have some Hispanics that are trying to come across the border, you know, you have 10-1 border guards trying to keep them out of the country. But here, if you have whites coming from Europe, it's easy. If you're Asian, it's, you know, not quite as easy, but it's, you know, it's better than if you're black. And then it goes on and on to being the enforcement. The maximum enforcement is going to be against blacks.
Right.
But we don't see this. We only see when something happens, Alan, if something happens where a group of Haitians get on a boat trying to come to this country, you got the news media everywhere.
Exactly. If people could see for themselves on television the way people are treated in these centers that the immigration people lock people up in, it would be a whole new experience. They're very similar to the dog pens that they're using in Guantanamo to house people. And, you know, most people have never gone through an experience like that. I happen to have gone through an experience like that when I was deported from Canada, so I know a little about that personally. But I'll tell you, most people will never know a situation like that, so they have no empathy at all for people that are being treated in this manner by the immigration people in this country. And these immigration people are the most viciously racist people you'll ever want to come across. This whole Homeland Security, you know, just viciously racist to the core.
Oh, yeah, to the core.
Yeah. And
go to Arizona if you want to see about border enforcement.
Yeah, well, come up here to the Canadian border, too. And, you know, you listen
whether
to
you
ladies,
go north or south.
Yeah, you go to a restaurant, and you listen to these guys from Homeland Security talk, and, you know, it's just nothing but one racist comment after another coming out of their mouths. And you wonder how the United States government can even hire people like this. But it's these kind of people that they want in these positions of power over other people that are trying to make their way to a better life.
Alan, health care.
Well,
how is propaganda? I mean, do we really see, I mean, they presented like 2,200 pages and passed a health care bill. I mean, and they say it's good for us. It's going to solve the problems, they say, for the 49 million people that were uninsured. Are we under Obamacare? Is this nation going to receive? Will everyone have health care available to them?
This is probably one of the better examples, besides the military-industrial complex, where the government has effectively used propaganda, where they've taken a little kernel of truth and woven it into a whole bunch of lies, is this whole health care debate. And Obamacare should be called the health insurance and pharmaceutical industry privatization and profit maximization act of 2010, because that's what
exactly.
It is. It's all about profits by corporations and even the doctors. You know, one of the biggest lies that's being perpetuated in this country is that it takes private for profit health care in order to make people well. And
right,
you know,
exactly.
This is the biggest lie that I've ever heard
in my
biggest entire
lie.
Life.
It was a 2,200-page lie to make people think that you're going to have health care. But it was a lie, and
well,
it's being sold to the American
people. I haven't even
read
a couple of those pages, let alone all 2,200 pages. And most of the people in Congress, in the U.S. House and Senate that voted for this Obamacare, they haven't even read a fraction of it themselves. And now we're being told that it takes some 30,000 pages to interpret this law, you know. So you got
right,
whole,
exactly.
You've got entire businesses coming up and just new starts to advise business how to escape paying health care for people. So you get these. Yeah, well, it's true.
No, I know you're right.
Funny. But you have these
it's hilarious.
Who are hiring people to tell them how to evade getting out of Obamacare, and now you have literally millions of people that work for Taco Bell and some of these other fast food restaurants and everything, they're being advised by these professionals, a lot of them former politicians, former members of Congress and the Senate, telling them how they can evade Obamacare, and it'll leave the people on their own to get insurance. You know, private insurance that's going to cost them $1,300, $1,400 a month for an entire family. Who at working at Taco Bell or McDonald's can afford that?
Alan, the last one that I'm going to cover, because I want you to just mention how people can reach you. Labor statistics. We can see that when it comes to propaganda and talking about labor and how people are going back to work, the labor statistics that come out at the end of every month, well, actually come out at the beginning of every month, how is that used as propaganda in this country? Because people don't know what the real truth is, that we have over 25 million people unemployed in this country.
Well, you know, this is one of the areas that I'm quite familiar with. The United States Department of Labor has the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I think that they do a wonderful job. They compile all these statistics about living standards, about the cost of living in this country. But it takes politicians in order to weave these truths into great big lies.
Right,
and,
exactly.
This is the way
that's
they
where the
use,
propaganda machine takes over.
Yep. And if people were to just look at the raw information from the United States Department of and the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Department of Labor, they would get a much different image of what's going on in this country. If you read Alan Greenspan's most recent book, The Age of Turbulence. I'm not a fan of Greenspan or anything, but I do recommend that people read his book.
I know you're not.
And the reason I recommend that people read his book is because he talks very openly and frankly about how important it is for businesses to have first dibs on this information that comes out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics in order to formulate corporate policy. And he talks about how it's necessary to keep this information from the American people in general.
Right.
So, you know, this is Alan Greenspan, you know, the guy that used to be the head of everything in
economics
in this
country. The Federal Reserve, the chairman.
Yeah, and here he is telling in his own book that essentially what he's arguing is that this information should be available to business, but it should never be made available to working people. You know,
well,
you've got to
read between
the lines, but this is what he's saying.
I appreciate you coming on the show today, Alan, on the Socialist Insight. And Alan has been discussing with us the power of propaganda and the media under capitalism. Is the news really news? I say, no, it's not news. It's propaganda. Alan, how can people reach you?
Well, they can call me at 218-386-2432, or they can Google my name, Alan Mackey, A-L-A-N-M-A-K-I, and they'll come up with my blog, the Podunk blog, and all my contact information is right there, email address, and everything. Anybody that wants to call, you know, I'm always willing to talk to people about these things.
And Alan, I want to thank you always for adding so much to the Socialist Insight, and we look forward to having you back in 2 weeks. Thanks again, Alan. Thank you, Ruth Ann. We'll be looking forward to having our listeners to join us next week. Thanks again. Have a good night.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Good night.
You're welcome. Good night.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Welcome to the Research Rabbit Hole Radio Show with Cynthia Hamill. Tonight we have special guest Lennon Honor speaking on the way that the media yanks everyone's emotional chains with the 9/11 cycle. I heard Lennon speak at the Paranoia Con and wanted to have him speak on my show to explain all of his theories to my audience. Welcome to the show, Lennon. Great to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure, Cynthia. Thank you so much for having me. Good to speak with you again.
Yeah, great to speak with you. You gave an outstanding presentation, and I definitely wanted you on my show where you could explain all of these wonderful theories to my audience. So I'm looking forward to this. It was an outstanding presentation, and I can't wait to share this with everybody.
Oh, thank you so much. And that the Free Your Mind Conference spearheaded by Mark Passio was absolutely phenomenal, and so much wonderful information passing through there, and I'm just glad I'm able to come here and share what I shared at the conference.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your theory. One of the things that I remembered the most was the 6 weeks leading up to the 9/11 anniversary every year, how they kind of like yank everybody's chains emotionally and pull everybody back into the cycle by having recurring themes in the news and everything that seem to be some made up and some maybe propaganda stories and that type of thing. So I loved how you explained that.
Yes, and this is what I call mass media cyclical programming timeline. And mass media, in terms of propaganda, it's mainly cyclical. It's cyclical in nature. In other words, it comes out at particular times each year, and the same types of stories that come out at a particular time in a year, they will come out the following year at that same type, that same time, just a year later and so forth and so on. And in my research, what I have found over the last 4 years dealing with media cycles, dealing with the various techniques that media employs to manipulate the psychological condition of the human species, I found that there was a particular cycle that is run that is directly related to the trauma of September 11, 2001. So, for instance, at the conference, I gave reference, and I can read this right out of my book on page 97, that within the 6 weeks leading up to the anniversary of September 11, 2001, we find a steady buildup of September 11, 2001 trigger stories. And what I mean by trigger stories, this is what you mean by pulling people's emotional chain. It triggers emotions. It really triggers the trauma associated with September 11, 2001, and therefore all of the emotions that people felt are also triggered, the emotions that they felt on September 11, 2001. And there are trigger stories, trigger characters, trigger words, even trigger digits now that are used by mass media in the propaganda campaign in this particular cycle. And it's in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th. As a matter of fact, we are currently in this particular cycle. And as I write inside my book, and it's interesting because it's not a theory anymore, because once you actually see it play itself out and it's confirmed by mass media itself in terms of the cyclical nature of their programming, it is no longer a theory. It becomes an actual fact. And let me give you guys an example of what I mean by that. Within the 6 weeks leading up to the anniversary of September 11, 2001, we find a steady buildup of September 11, 2001 trigger stories in the news. Topics include, number one, terror threats. Number two, bomb threats. Number three, stories about Al-Qaeda. Number four, stories about Osama bin Laden. Number five, TSA and plane problems. Number six, national security issues. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Number seven, also particular characters are brought back into the stage show, if you will, that trigger trauma. For instance, Pastor Terry Jones being one of the individuals. Number eight, credible but unconfirmed threats, which is neurolinguistic programming. How can something be credible but unconfirmed? This is precisely the verbiage that is being used in the propaganda. We have this credible but unconfirmed threat, this terrorist threat, and we're going to close these embassies. It's perfectly predictable. I told you all at the conference going back months ago that as we reach into these 6 weeks leading up to September 11th of this year, you can expect these types of stories. And here we are today, stories about New York City, Ground Zero, and Homeland Security. And I should mention that these stories, it's not that they don't appear at other times in the year. It's just that in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th, since September 11, 2001, we begin to see a concentration of these stories that steadily build up in magnitude and also in terms of frequency until we get to September 11th, where it's at an all-time high and people are all fearful all over again, just like on September 11, 2001. And then after September 11th ends, it slowly fades out again. This is the mass media cyclical timeline.
Wow. Yeah, I remember seeing that, and I was, like, astonished, you know, to see this up on the board, and you were explaining this whole cycle where they're just, you know, basically, getting everybody to kind of, you know, go into this whole fear cycle, because they're really building up all of these stories, whether they're true or not. And, you know, I really admired how you stated all this, because it was done in a very good way. And what was it that you were calling this? It's like the name of it, the cycle that you're calling it?
You mean the 911 fear-based mind control program?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so in other words, I call it, and that's what my book is titled too, the 911 fear-based mind control program. And the idea in terms of how it works is that any given traumatizing event, such as September 11th, but we can use any traumatizing event in our life. September 11th is very important, because this was for the first time in human history wherein technology was so advanced that you had a traumatizing event that was globalized in real time, and it had global implications, and therefore the trauma of the event was also globalized. That's the first time in human history where this has happened, where people all over the world tuned in to the horror and the trauma of September 11, 2001. And I talked about this too, that when we are traumatized, we come under a level of fear. And when we are fearful, we begin to externalize power. And once we externalize power, that's when we are controlled. Okay, so that's the four-step process in terms of control. So in other words, the 911 fear-based mind control program is the use of September 11th and the trauma associated with that event, and then the fear that it stimulates. If you trigger that trauma, which is subconscious, you trigger the trauma, people will begin to feel fear again that's associated with the trauma of September 11, 2001, and then they begin to externalize power all over again, just like people are doing now. Because their trauma is being triggered with these stories about Al-Qaeda threats, which have a subliminal association with September 11, 2001. Their trauma is being triggered. They begin to externalize power, and that's how you maintain people in a state of control. I say inside of the book that the greatest means of control is not actualized through military might, physical subjugation, or brute force. It's not a physical thing. That the greatest means of control is actualized through the manipulation of the psychological condition of the human species. And in point of fact, the trauma of September 11th, which was not consciously processed by the global population, but rather was subconsciously interpreted, has been used as a tool of psychological warfare via propagandization of particular stories that trigger the trauma. And whenever you trigger the trauma, people revert back to that state of helplessness that they felt on September 11, 2001. And as long as you have people fearful in that way, they externalize power all over again, and you maintain control. And this is what I call the 911 fear-based mind control program.
Right. Yeah, that's it's a fascinating way that you've pulled all this together and to have, you know, looked at the pattern 4 years back and see that every year they're playing the same type of drama, you know, the same type of pattern is pretty ingenious. I like what you've done. It's a really good concept.
Yeah, well, thank you. And for anyone, what you can do is you can just follow media and follow it consciously, and you will begin to see how particular traumatizing events are always brought back into the news at particular times each year. And in addition to that, there are also stories that are issued around that. Some of them are completely contrived. Some of them are fake stories. Some of them are actually real events. But these particular events are reported on by mass media, and they have a correlation to that particular traumatizing event that may have taken place last year or 2 years ago, or maybe on September 11, 2001. So what has happened since September 11, 2001, in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th of any given year, you get these types of stories in the news about terror threats, bomb threats, Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, et cetera, Homeland security issues, plane problems, et cetera. And what it does is that it triggers that trauma. Okay, and let me explain this real quickly here, that one of the things that you know, people have underestimated the traumatizing effect of what took place on September 11, 2001. And most people tend to focus in on, you know, who did it and why. Well, I shouldn't say most people. People who tend to not abide to the official version. And I'll tell you right now that I do not abide to the official version by any means, to any degree. In point of fact, I consider it to be, as someone who approaches things intellectually, I find that the official version of September 11th is an insult to human intelligence. Okay, so I'll say that. But for those of us who have asked questions, and myself included, it's important to ask questions. Who did it and why? How was this accomplished, et cetera? But then there's also a deeper question, and this is where I'm at this point in my progression. So over all these years of researching and going through so much information and so forth and so on, the question that I began to ask was, well, what's the psychological implications of having the global population experiencing this traumatizing event that we call September 11, 2001, where we had, you know, what we saw at least on playing itself out on the television, or in some cases for those who had internet access that could actually, you know, handle that level of bandwidth in terms of video during that time, or over the airwaves, what have you, or even in the newspapers. what impact does it have on the human psyche? And we are seeing death and destruction on a massive level play itself out over an eight-hour period, condensed within over an eight-hour period, and then in the process, our intellectual processes are compromised for three main reasons. One, sensory overload. This is the tool of the propaganda tool of mind control and manipulation. You overload people's senses. Okay, you give them too much information. You give them too much in terms of their sights, there's the sounds, the touch, et cetera. You give them too much for them to consciously process. Whenever this happens, this is a tool of psychological warfare for mind control. If you can get a person to a point where their senses are overloaded, it's called sensory overload, you access their subconscious mind. And the reason why is because the conscious mind, when it is unable to process any given element, it experiences psychological trauma, and the subconscious mind kicks in to take that trauma and submerges it within the subconscious mind. So that was one of the primary reasons as to why September 11th and the trauma associated with the event was not consciously processed. Okay, sensory overload itself. I could go through all this inside the book. The second main major reason was conflicting information. There were so many conflicting reports, so much, and I outlined some of those inside of the book too. Whenever you have information that is conflictive, you begin to experience psychological trauma. Okay, and therefore your subconscious mind kicks in. It takes that trauma and submerges it in the subconscious mind. This is just like exactly what happened on September 11th. And then the most important element, the intellectually stifling emotion of fear itself compromises the conscious mind's ability to process any given element, in this case September 11th. And because the extreme levels of fear that we felt on that day, the conscious mind experienced such an extreme level of trauma that the subconscious mind activated and took the trauma and submerged it within the subconscious mind. Now, once it is submerged within the subconscious mind will work diligently to process the trauma, and you will not even have to consciously think about it. But what media does, understanding these basic elements of human psychology, what mass media does, because by now, after 12 years, you would think that the subconscious mind would have you know, basically resolved this trauma. What mass media does is it triggers the trauma at particular times in the year with scripted events. It's perfectly predictable, too, by the way. At particular times, usually in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th, stories come out that trigger the trauma. And therefore, the subconscious mind interprets these stories as if September 11th is happening all over again. And the reason why is because the subconscious mind does not distinguish between past, present, and future. So when this trauma of September 11th is submerged within the subconscious mind, and you're not consciously aware of it, what mass media does is it triggers your trauma. And once it triggers your trauma, what happens? Out of trauma, you begin to be fearful again. Out of being fearful again, you begin to externalize power all over again. And out of externalizing power, you are placed back into a state of control. So therefore, for the last 12 years, almost 12 years now, mass media has turned the trauma of September 11th around, flipped it upside down, and turned it into a massive tool, really a weapon of psychological mass destruction against the global population, and in so doing have maintained control and domination of people based upon fear. And that's precisely why I call it the 911 fear-based mind control program.
Yeah, that's well named. I like that. That's very catchy. And your book title is also that. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have a website where people can find your information, Lennon?
Yes, I have two websites. All of my older work, my documentary work, you can find it on lennonhonorfilms.com, LennonHonorFilms. And then my more recent work, I do radio shows and live video streams, et cetera. You can find it at lennonhonor.com, LennonHonor. And the book is at lennonhonor.com/911. That's the digits 911.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that people can find you and your information, because what you're sharing is really important. And I think, you know, half of this game, if people can just realize that they're being played literally like a violin emotionally, then they can kind of step back and see there's more to the news and there's more to what we're actually seeing with our mainstream medias than what most people would typically analyze. Because every time we have something like the Aurora shooting incident or the Sandy Hook shooting incident or say, the Boston Marathon event, people don't realize that some of these can actually be a false flag operation playing out. So once again, we're being pulled into some type of drama and psychological warfare to get us to vote in a certain way or to perhaps take away, like, say, gun rights or something. So the more people can analyze and step back and see the patterns of our mass media and all these propaganda stories, the more likely they are to maybe question what's really going on, don't you think?
Yes, and you bring up an important event, too. For instance, the Sandy Hook school shooting on page 123, I have that outlined in terms of mass media cyclical programming. And you can use that or any traumatizing event, whether it's real or staged, because in terms of psychological warfare, it doesn't matter whether or not something is real or fake, because if a person interprets it as being real through propaganda, it's real to them. Okay? So there's so many events out there that I know were staged, or, you know, some people may call a false flag or what have you. But even still, we can ask the question, does it have impact on people? Absolutely. So in terms of a lot of the events that are out there, and including these current, you know, Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks, this is all fakery. There's no evidence or substance to this whatsoever. But there are people who react to these levels of propaganda and accept it as being true. One of the things I want to point out, too, because you brought up the Sandy Hook school shooting, is one of the critical questions I began to ask in terms of mass media is, why is it that mass media brings up these traumatizing events, whether they're real or fake, on the anniversary of these traumatizing events? Why does mass media do that? Why is it necessary to do that? And the more and more, because you think about it, even September 11th, every single year, stories about, and there's these retrospectives about September 11th, and now here we are almost 12 years later, and it's going to happen this year. It's perfectly predictable. Why does media always take the most traumatizing events and then re-report on them on the anniversary? That was the critical question that I began to ask. And what I found was that the reason why is because oftentimes the trauma associated with these events are unresolved in people. And as a consequence, if you issue the programming all over again, in other words, you trigger the trauma by bringing the story back up, you re-traumatize people. One of the fascinating aspects of the subconscious mind is that it does not distinguish between past, present, and future. So in other words, if you experience a trauma that's submerged in the subconscious mind, and then someone issues the story that's related to that trauma, your subconscious mind will believe that the trauma is taking place right now. So in other words, you can keep people stuck in a state of perpetual re-traumatization, and in so doing, they're going to be stuck in a state of fear. What better way to control people? You know, it's psychological warfare. Just maintain people in a state of perpetual fear. And when you maintain them in a state of perpetual fear by stimulating and triggering their trauma, they will always externalize power, and therefore you will maintain them in level control. And that's precisely why you can expect, as we get to December 14th and the Sandy Hook school shooting anniversary, stories will come up in retrospectives about the Sandy Hook school shooting. They do this with any horrifying, traumatizing event in recent history, even going all the way back 100 years ago to the sinking of the Titanic, the same programming issue.
Wow.
It's true. Because I said the sinking of the Titanic. You say, what? Yeah. You know, just think about this, ladies and gentlemen. For the sinking of the Titanic, which took place over 100 years ago, on April 14th, 1912, do y'all know on April 14th, 2012, there was a massive retrospective event wherein people got together, they lit candles, they sang songs, ate cake, and cried and mourned over the death of all those who died from the sinking of the Titanic. And then they bring their children along. Okay, many of these people, these older people, these grown people, they weren't even alive then. They don't know anyone who would die or anything with that. But why do they do that? Why do we come to these morbid, it's really a morbid death ritual? Well, it's to traumatize people. And then you bring the children and you traumatize them too. The children have nothing to do with that. You traumatize them. They externalize, they come into a level of fear, and then they externalize power. You maintain them in control. Well, that's precisely what's been taking place for the last 12 years with September 11th. Every single year, people get together. And they have this whole ceremony, and people mourn and cry, and they bring their children along and traumatize their children over the event. The children don't even know what the event was, but then they show them the pictures. They show them the video footage. What are they doing? They're traumatizing. I want people to understand that psychological warfare is about traumatizing your mind. More specifically, traumatizing your subconscious awareness to such a degree that your subconscious mind activates to protect your conscious mind, and therefore the trauma itself is submerged without your conscious awareness within your subconscious mind. I'm going to say one other thing, too, and that is that for instance, if you knew my trauma and you knew how to trigger my trauma, you could literally control me indefinitely. If I knew your trauma and I knew how to trigger your trauma, I could trigger your trauma and I would know how you will respond in advance. And so I can issue the triggering program. It can be a story, it can be a phrase, it can be even an image that triggers your trauma, and you will react in a way that is perfectly predictable. Well, this is precisely what mass media has done and continues to do to the global population in these 6 weeks leading up to the anniversary of September 11th, triggering trauma, causing people to externalize power, which is perfectly predictable behavior pattern, and then therefore you maintain people in a state of control.
Wow. Yeah, this it's brilliant. I think you're really onto something with this theory. And I also liked what you said about, like, the comic book characters and the hero analogy and the villain analogy. Can you go a little bit into that? Because that was phenomenal, too. I really enjoyed that part of your speech.
Yes, mass media, it operates based upon scripts. Okay, so let me ask you, have you ever gone to a movie and really enjoyed the movie?
Yeah.
Okay,
I love movies.
Okay, me too. Me and my wife, we try to find movies. We have a very difficult time finding good movies these days.
Yeah.
What's one of your favorite movies?
Oh, wow. I guess going back to one that you just mentioned, I did like The Titanic. I thought it was a really good film,
okay.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, so The Titanic, as an example, The Titanic. You enjoyed that film. And tell me, what was the most enjoyable part about that? Was it the love story?
Yeah, I like the love story, and I like the character development. I thought they did a really good job with the two, you know, that fell in love. I thought it was really well written.
Yes, it was well written. You enjoyed it?
Yeah, it was really good.
Did you have an emotional response to it at all?
Oh, yeah. It really pulled everybody in.
Okay, so it pulled you in. Now, let me ask you a critical question. Was it real?
It felt real. It was believable.
Yes, it's believable. Now, the point being is, see, we go to the movies, and my wife and I, we watch movies. We're always trying to find good movies. We have a very difficult time finding them, but we try to find good movies to watch, and we're compelled by them. Okay, we watch them, and we have physiological, emotional reactions to them, even though we know that, in essence, it's a script that is playing itself out. Someone wrote this in advance. They acted it out, and it presented itself. It's a whole production, in other words. It's a stage show, okay? And this is okay because we understand in the end we know that it's not real. But I want people to understand this dynamic as I explain this supervillain archetype. It's just like you or I or my wife, we will go to a movie and we will enjoy the movie. We will enjoy the entertainment value. And on some level, we accept certain aspects of it to be real, even though we know it's not. It's a stage show. But we accept certain elements as being real. That's why we have physiological, emotional, and psychological responses to it, because on some level, it compels us to believe that it is real. See, some of us, we go to the movies and we accept certain aspects to be real. Some of us, we may go onto YouTube and we may watch something and we accept it to be real. Some of us will watch something on television and we believe it to be real, just on certain levels for entertainment value. But then there's another stage show that is playing itself out that is far more profound than The Titanic.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying here? That a movie at the movie theater is one level of this, but there's something else that's operating 24 hours a day that is impacting people, that is causing people to have real physiological and emotional reactions, psychological reactions. The difference is that this particular stage show, people perceive to be 100% true. And this particular stage show is what I call the global motion picture stage show. It is the culmination of all of the news stories that are being issued that are quite fanciful in point of fact, that people believe to be true. And they tune in and they watch. They find entertainment value in them. And then they have a real physiological, emotional, and psychological response. And then they believe it's totally 100% real. This brings us to what I call the supervillain archetype.
Yeah, I remembered that from your speech. That was really cool.
You see, the supervillain archetype is just one of the major components to the global motion picture stage show. You have, you know, independent films, you have Hollywood films, you also have Hollywood blockbuster films, but then you have the global motion picture stage show that is quite scripted too, by the way, and people tune in and they go and they watch, and it's usually expressed within the mainstream news, in some cases even the alternative news, but the point being is that they accept it as being 100% true, including what I call the supervillain archetype. The supervillain archetype is really the focal point of the global motion picture stage show as it relates to fear. In other words, you have to always give the general population something to be fearful of, even if it's just a script that they perceive to be 100% true. Even if it's a movie, there's always a, in these action films, there's always a superhero and there's always a supervillain. There always must be something. So just like in the movies, you have this dynamic. Well, guess what? In the Global Motion Picture Stage Show, you have the same dynamic playing itself out. Let me go ahead and read this out of my book so that I want people to understand this, because when you really understand the cyclical nature and how it's all scripted in terms of mass media and its propagandization of particular events, you take a whole new orientation to the propaganda, and then you can take a step back from it and not be placed inside a state of fear based upon the programming. One of the preeminent tools of this fear, what I call fear-based mind control program, is what I call the supervillain archetype. I'll read this directly out of my book on page 89. And everyone follow me on this, okay, because I want us to, you know, I want us to intellectualize this. On the day of September 11, 2001, there was a great deal of confusion circulating in mass media in terms of why the attacks were carried out and who was responsible for the attacks. One of the names that came up relatively early on was that of Osama bin Laden. From that moment, and without any evidence or proof, people began to believe that Osama bin Laden was responsible for the terror attacks. In essence, Osama bin Laden became what I call the supervillain archetype. There have been countless supervillain archetypes throughout history. Prior to Osama bin Laden, the supervillain archetype was Saddam Hussein. How many of us remember that? Okay, we always have to have a boogeyman to keep people fearful with his weapons of mass destruction, his Scud missiles, etc. Interesting enough, there has been a subliminal association made between Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction, and September 11, 2001. These subliminal associations are what ultimately justifies the war on terror. It also has justified, you know, perpetual terror in people's, in terms of them tuning into this Global Motion Picture Stage Show and accepting things as being true, everything as being true. I must also mention that the supervillain archetype is a longstanding subconscious program that reaches back to Adolf Hitler in 1945. The subconscious program is also fear-based and is scripted with the same general themes and storylines. So here's the script. Let's understand the script and intellectualize it. Number one, the supervillain archetype is a psychopathic dictator / terrorist. How many times have you heard that?
Yeah, it seems to be a recurring theme.
Yes, over and over, because it's a script. That's how you know that it's part of a script, is because they represent it over and over again. Just like in terms of the 913 based mind control program, if you track it over the course, for me, I've been tracking it for 4 years. In the 6 weeks leading up to September 11, you get particular stories in the news because it's a script that's run every single year at particular times. Number two, so the supervillain archetype is a psychopathic dictator or terrorist. Number two, the supervillain archetype is elusive. He always runs and hides. Okay, he never deals with things directly on because he's a coward. So he always runs and hides. Number three, the supervillain archetype does not have a standing army to protect him from capture. So he may be a psychopathic dictator of a country. He may even been a psychopathic dictator of a country for many decades. But in the end, he does, for whatever reason in the script, he does not have a standing army to protect him from capture. Number four, the supervillain archetype's family members or close military officers are killed by oppositional forces. Okay, so family members are always killed. And then number five, the supervillain archetype is always captured, and he's usually found in a hole in the ground, or he's said to be living in a hole in the ground somewhere. So
I remember that, man. That is so crazy. Wow.
Yeah, so
you know,
let's do
it's true
let's
of
do
all these stories.
Yeah, so let's do three here, okay? So anyone who's doubting this, just use your intellectual process and just ask yourself, do I recognize the pattern? Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Number one, Saddam Hussein, a psychopathic dictator who, in the end, did not have a standing army to protect him from capture. Recall the official story was that NATO forces seized Iraq with little resistance from the Iraqi army. In March of 2003, it is said that Saddam Hussein went into hiding. He's elusive, okay? On July
27th, he certainly is.
He is. They're always elusive. Even in the action films where they have these superhero and supervillains, the supervillain is always elusive. On July 22nd, 2003, Saddam Hussein's sons, Uday and Qusay, were killed. Their sons are always killed. The idea is the sons have to be killed in the script so that the sons won't come of age and enact a level of vengeance for their father's death. Okay, that's the drama factor. We all want a good movie, right?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So the sons are always killed. On December 13, 2003, Saddam Hussein was captured. He was hiding in a hole in the ground. Y'all remember that, the spider hole? Fanciful stuff.
Yeah.
It was also said that at the time of his capture, Saddam Hussein had a gun but did not use the gun to protect himself. Keep that in mind, too, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, let's move to the next one, Osama bin Laden. Maybe that's all just, you know, that's just only one example. So let's try another example and see if there's any relationship or correlations that we can intellectualize here. Here we go. Osama bin Laden, a psychopathic terrorist. And supposed al-Qaeda leader, Osama bin Laden, was said to be the mastermind of September 11, 2001. He was also said to be elusive, hiding in caves. A cave is a Instagram. Sound familiar? Okay, with the
yeah,
Holy
Grail. Wow.
On the day of the supposed assassination of Osama bin Laden, White House officials reported that one of Osama bin Laden's younger sons was killed. The sons have all—they always have to be killed so that they won't come of age and enact a level of vengeance later on. It was also said that Osama bin Laden had weapons with him, but did not use the weapons to protect himself. Okay, sound familiar? Okay,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, script playing itself out. And understand this, that the difference, though, in terms of Osama bin Laden is that he didn't have a standing army because he was a psychopathic terrorist. But in terms of the supervillain archetype, he fits the mold. And in terms of the script writing, it fits perfectly within the supervillain archetype. Let's do one more, because maybe this is all a coincidence. Maybe it is. Let's do one more. And I tend to take a very, you know, intellectual approach to when I'm analyzing media artifacts. Okay, so I look for evidence or proof. And if there's evidence or proof to prove any particular claim, then it's justified. Okay, so from my vantage point, if you begin to see particular patterns emerge and they're played out over and over and over again, then you recognize that there is a script or a program that is being run. It's a logic stream. It should make sense to people. Let's say that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, all these correlations. Okay, there's five things. Supervillain archetype is a psychopath, dictator, or terrorist. Supervillain archetype is always elusive. He runs and hides. The supervillain archetype does not have a standing army to protect him from capture. The supervillain archetype's family members or close military officers are killed by oppositional forces, or the supervillain archetype is always captured, usually found in the holy ground. Let's say that that's all a coincidence. Let's go to Muammar Gaddafi, a psychopathic dictator of Libya. Gaddafi faced growing resistance from Libyan rebels and NATO forces. In September of 2011, Gaddafi went into hiding. He's elusive. Sounds familiar?
Yeah.
On October 20th, 2011, it was said that Gaddafi was captured while hiding inside a drainage pipe. A drainage pipe is a hole in the ground. People realize
wow.
that, right? Y'all remember that? They said he was in a drainage pipe. That's a hole in the ground. And the idea, because
yeah.
these super villains, they always have a hole in the ground because it's their lair. Y'all go and look at Marvel super comic, the comic books. This is all scripted. They take these scripts and they regurgitate them, and they put it onto the global motion picture stage show. And people believe it, just like when we go and we see a good film in the movie theater. Same dynamic plays itself out. So he's found in a hole in the ground. Gaddafi was later killed. His son, Mustasim, was also killed. They always kill the son. It was reported that Gaddafi had in his possession a golden gun, but did not use the weapon to protect himself, just like Saddam Hussein had weapons, didn't protect himself, and Osama bin Laden had weapons, didn't protect. Why? Because they're cowards. They're always projected and perceived. They are to be perceived as being cowards. That's why they run and hide, and when they have weapons to protect themselves, they don't use them. In the end, Gaddafi did not have a standing army to protect him from capture. Sounds familiar. One other thing I want to point out. In particular, Muammar Gaddafi, he has a golden gun. Where did they get that from? People think about that. Where do we get this dynamic? Because it's a stage show. It's like a movie. It's a script that is played over and over again. Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, Muammar Gaddafi, probably Bashar al-Assad, too, in terms of his script that's running, taking place in terms of Syria right now. I wouldn't be surprised at a certain point he'd be elusive and then he'd find him in a hole somewhere in Syria. But the point being is, in terms of the golden gun, where have we heard this before? People, if you go back and you look at 007 movies, there was a 007 movie that was titled The Man with the Golden Gun, and he was the supervillain archetype. That's why you give, in terms of the script, you give Muammar Gaddafi the golden gun, because the golden gun subliminally is associated with the supervillain archetype that played itself out in the Hollywood action film 007. See, this is what
wow.
I mean. It's the same script, just regurgitated and fabricated so as to fit a global population that people tune into, and they have very real emotional, physiological, psychological responses. And the problem is, I must say, is that when we go to the movies, we still walk out of the movie theater and we say, okay, I watched the movie. It wasn't real. And we live our lives. The problem is that with the global motion picture stage show and all of the scripts that are being run, it's a stage show. People accept it as being 100% true, and when they walk out of that particular arena, they still believe it's all true, and it continues to influence and impact their everyday life. That's the supervillain archetype.
Wow. Yeah, this is very powerful, because when you can isolate it and you go story to story to story and see the full pattern, it's identical. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good job. Good work.
Yeah, and you know, that's why it's effective, is because it is it's repetitive, because you've already programmed people with Saddam Hussein. So that program is already embedded in their subconscious mind. All you have to do is issue the programming, and you write the same script all over again, change the name, and now they accept a new supervillain archetype because it's already been embedded. this notion that he's always elusive. You know, he doesn't have a standing army. He's all, you know, this, and then you get to Muammar Gaddafi. The same thing plays itself all over again. See, I want people really ask the critical question, because this is what in part what I call the regime change script, and that is to say that Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi, who was in control of Libya for decades, many decades, in an oil-rich nation, in point of fact, Saddam Hussein being an oil-rich nation, and he's supposed to have Scud missiles, he's supposed to have a standing army. They never have standing armies, okay? They never have standing armies. And the question is why? How is it that you don't have a standing army and you are a ruler of an oil-rich country, in the case of Iraq, and you've been in power for decades? You would think that you, and because of you being in power, that you would have been able to manage by now a standing army that would rival any other standing army in the world. But that's not what took place in Iraq. In the end, the standing army, there was no standing army, and NATO walked right on in and took over. Same thing with Libya. You got ragtag rebels, which were actors, by the way. They were playing out a role, playing out a script. They come in, and they cause all this damage to a country where the rulers, Muammar Gaddafi has been in control for decades. He's supposed to have a standing army, but the standing army, you never see the standing army. No video footage whatsoever. Who are these rebels fighting against? They're not fighting against anyone. It's not necessary to actually have a war. You just have the rumors of war, issue the propaganda to justify the war, and then you issue the script that has been regurgitated over and over and over again, and people believe it to be true, just like many people when we go into the movie theaters, we believe what we're watching to be true.
Wow, that's just amazing. It's very, very true. It's true of movie scripts as well as comic books and even our news. You know, this whole thing is crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People are buying into it.
Yes. I have a new video series, too, on my website, lynnmanor.com, called The Global Motion Picture Stage Show. And in that, I show how, in terms of the news, a lot of what is reporting on is just regurgitated information. And I give this one clip where it's around what is this holiday with the Easter Bunny, whatever the holiday is for the Easter or whatever it is. They have the Easter Bunny, and someone on YouTube they basically recorded, I don't know, maybe it may have been 20 different stations, news stations, and they recorded what the news station, the anchor man or anchor woman, was saying to you know, and during the reporting. And do you know that in those 20 different stations, they reported the same thing verbatim?
Wow.
The verbiage was exactly the same. How is that possible? It's possible because they're running off of scripts.
Oh, my gosh.
And see, the Global Motion Picture Stage Show, you don't go to the movie theaters to watch the Global Motion Picture Stage Show. You watch the news. That's the Global Motion Picture Stage Show. And people believe it to be true, just like people right now believe that there's these terrorist threats. There are no terrorist threats. These are just – I told you, it's in the book. Next year, the same thing will happen because it's a script, nothing more. And yet people believe it to be true.
Wow, yeah, that's very true. Yeah, it seems to be working. People buy into it, and they just go with the program for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, I also remember you bringing up G.I. Joe and the programming that went, you know, with the kids. Was it a comic book that you mentioned or something like that? That people.
G.I. Joe was a cartoon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you explain a little bit about that? Because I thought that was pretty interesting, too, with the supervillain archetype.
Yes. Now, the supervillain archetype in G.I. Joe was Cobra Commander. But see, Cobra Commander is really Osama bin Laden. And Cobra Commander, his terrorist network or his terrorist group is called Cobra. Well, that's Al-Qaeda. And what I wanted to point out when I brought that up was that oftentimes we're prepared decades in advance for propaganda that comes out much later on in our life. Okay, so if you can get children together and I used to watch G.I. Joe religiously. Okay, G.I. Joe and Transformers, those were the two things that I used to watch religiously. My grandmother, in her wisdom, she wouldn't let me watch as much as I would like, and she would put on Little House on the Prairie instead. And I used to sit up there like, oh, I got to watch Little House on the Prairie, okay? But the point being is that in watching that cartoon, there was so much terrorist propaganda, and even the language, they say Cobra, you know, the ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world. And G.I. Joe, the greatest American hero. See, I can even remember the programming that I got. Here I am at the age of 37, and I got this programming when I was, what, maybe 13? Maybe even younger than that, whenever G.I. Joe came out. I can recite the song to you right now. G.I. Joe, the real American hero. G.I. Joe is there. Okay? G.I. Joe.
Good for you.
Yeah, you know, well, I don't know if it's good or not, you know what I'm saying? But the, and then the verbiage, you know, G.I. Joe, they're fighting against this ruthless, fighting against Cobra, this ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world. Okay, this is pre-programming for the propaganda that we get later on in life about Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. See, I'm gonna tell you all something. Al-Qaeda, that's a fiction. It's not real. It's not tangible. Okay, Osama bin Laden as being the mastermind of September 11, 2000, that's fiction. Okay, the only reason why people believe that is because they bought into the global motion picture stage show. No evidence or proof. We don't have any evidence or proof of Al-Qaeda. We don't have any evidence or proof that Osama bin Laden masterminded September 11th. No one can pinpoint any conclusive evidence or proof that would prove that claim. And I'm very big on intellectual process. In the absence of evidence or proof, you should not simply accept any given claim. So when mass media begins to say that on September 11th, part of the media blitz and propaganda, that Al-Qaeda was part of this and that the leader was Osama bin Laden, people buy into it, and they accept it as being true with no evidence or proof whatsoever. And I will propose that one of the reasons why, for a particular segment of the population who were in my age range, one of the reasons why we accepted that without any critical thought was because we had already received the pre-programming when we were children via G.I. Joe. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand something, too. In terms of the global motion picture stage show, it's closely tied to Hollywood films and when those films are released. And you will find that a lot of these supervillain, superhero archetype films come out in and around September 11th of any given year or in and around May 2nd of any given year. There's a reason why, because May 2nd is about Osama bin Laden and the death of Osama bin Laden and the greatest supervillain archetype of our time. Therefore, you make people fearful, but then you also produce these films that give the people the hero archetypes in the form of G.I. Joe, in the form of Transformers, in the form of Captain America. Same thing around September 11th, those movies that come out, they have those Marvel movies, even the Wolverine, that's all by design. It's part of the global motion picture stage show. And a lot of us, we were pre-programmed with concepts and ideas about terrorism when we were children while we were watching these cartoons. And then later on, we are more inclined, we're more susceptible to accepting these types of ideas in the form of Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden without any evidence or proof because we've already received the pre-programming. Very important point to make here.
Yeah, I can totally see that. That does make sense, and it's almost like they're just pulling up a trigger way back,
that's
and
right.
then
that's
they can
it.
Just play you like a violin from there on
that's
out.
Well, that is, and I hadn't thought of it like that, but you're absolutely right. That programming submerged within my subconscious mind of Cobra Commander and terrorism, Cobra, well, that's nothing more than Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. That was a program that was embedded in my subconscious mind. And then later on, what happened in September 11, 2001, mass media triggered that. They triggered that programming. That's a very important point. Now I'm going to have to quote you on that when I do my next presentation.
Okay.
Yes, precisely.
And I guess, you know, generations that grew up with, like, Charlie's Angels, they always had the villain in that, or even in Oh Mighty Isis, you know, that was playing earlier, you know. Mm-hmm. There was always a villain that Oh Mighty Isis was chasing and that type of thing. So all these different characterizations on TV and every show, like Batman had the theme of
Joker.
The villain and all that, you know.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You can carry it back, I guess, to almost every show would have a hero and a villain, you know.
Yes. And see, what mass media does is it creates super villains. They're not substantive. But if you create it and people tune in to that global motion picture stage show and perceive it to be 100% real, those super villains, which are not substantive, they still have an impact on people. Okay, they still make people uncomfortable. They still make people fearful. And whenever we're fearful, what happens? We externalize power. It's all about the externalization of power through psychological warfare. It's not anything physical per se. It's a mind game more than anything else. And that's why inside my book I outline what I call the 913-based mind control program and how September 11th has been used as a tool of psychological warfare and how every single year the trauma is triggered. The trauma is triggered, and as a consequence, we revert back to a state, a September 11, 2001 state where we're externalizing power. And I just think to myself, you know, what better way to maintain domination and control of the global population in point of fact than just to simply trigger their trauma, and when you trigger their trauma, they experience fear, they externalize power, and then you maintain control over them. It's quite ingenious from my vantage point. It is quite ingenious to have that type of a system set up to where all you have to do is trigger trauma through mass media, and you do it at particular times each year, and you maintain people in a subservient position. That is quite ingenious.
Yes, it is. And I've noticed there's also a pattern around tax day, April 15th or so. There's always some type of major terrorist event going on then that makes you really appreciate all the money that you're giving to the government that year, you know?
Yes, because you have to fight terrorism. And there's also another dynamic to that, too. They oftentimes, y'all just watching the news, around tax time, that's when you have a lot of celebrities who begin all of a sudden to have tax problems. Why are they reporting on these celebrities at that time? The reason why is because if mass media can cause you to believe that the IRS, they're willing to go after these people with all this money, and these are your icons, these are really your God figures in point of fact, these celebrities. What makes you think they won't come after you too?
Yeah, it's a role play type of thing where they're ricking people into seeing their role model go down and take the fall,
Absolutely. And because many people they externalize their identity onto their role models, these actors, actresses, et cetera. If these actors have these legal troubles, then they too must have these legal troubles. So what do? Okay, we must make sure we pay our taxes therefore. Okay. So if you want to validate that, just wait. And wait till around tax season, and then look into the news, and you will begin to see these types of stories. It's perfectly predictable, just like the stories about Al-Qaeda threats and Osama bin Laden coming in the news now, and these various unconfirmed but credible threats coming in the news. It's all perfectly predictable. And the reason why is because it's all scripted. And that's what I mean. If you can issue that programming around tax season, what are you doing? You're triggering people in a particular way so that you can cause them to react in a particular way. And the desired reaction would be for people to get out there and pay their taxes.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's definitely a way to get people to, take action and do exactly what they want. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they do it why? Not because of intellectual process or ethical principles. They do it because they are fearful. And out of the fear, they externalize power, and that's how they're maintaining state of control. I mean, the propaganda of mind control aspect to all of this in terms of mass media, it is quite ingenious. And this doesn't mean that the individuals who put out the think tanks, that these individuals are somehow good people. That's not what I'm proposing. But in terms of on a psychological level, understanding, the manipulation of human psychology, we have people who are operating on genius levels. And I have to recognize that. But that also means that, if we can begin to see the patterns, we can actually get to the point where these types of programs no longer impact us on an individual level, but then also as a species.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, this is a very interesting way to look at this. So what can we do to move beyond this programming? Is there anything that we can do as a culture to fight back and to actually take control and not play into this fear actualization that they're running all the time?
Yes, yes. And, I will say that it's not so much a physical thing that we can do. It's more of an internal mental thing that we – and I have three things that I outline inside the book. Okay, so let me go ahead and I'll go with each one of these. Number one, and specifically inside my book, not only do I outline it, I want fear-based mind control program. I talk about a whole lot of the other stuff too, but one of the things I do at the end is I provide – solutions on how we can begin to heal these levels of trauma, okay? Because any degree of triggering of trauma, there has to be trauma there first. There has to be some unresolved trauma. And what we find is that if we go through a healing process, which is really psychological when we talk about, media manipulation, if you can go through a healing process, you can eliminate the trauma, and therefore your trauma can't be triggered because it doesn't exist anymore. So then when media tries to issue the programming, the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th of every single year, just like right now, you won't be affected by it because you've already healed that subconscious trauma that was associated with September 11, 2001. So I give three things that people can do to heal the trauma of September 11th, but you can actually apply this to any level of trauma that you have ever experienced in your life. And number one is to purify your media stream. Okay, so in the case of September 11th or any traumatizing event, you want to purify your media stream to where the information that you are engaging, let's say the videos that you are engaging, the books that you are reading, the topics that you are looking into, the research material that you're looking into, make sure that it is not rooted in fear. Okay, make sure that it is not making you fearful, because what happens is that when you are fearful, you compromise your intellectual process. And in point of fact, when you are fearful perpetually, you are traumatizing yourself. And so long as we traumatize ourselves, our subconscious mind will not be able to process any past trauma, because now it's trying to deal with the current trauma. And then the past trauma is layered. In other words, it becomes further embedded within the subconscious mind. I talk about all this inside the book. So the first thing I would recommend that people do is to purify your information stream in regards to September 11, 2001, or any traumatizing event. And in particular, if it's a personal trauma, let's say a trauma from childhood, don't engage people who trigger that trauma. Don't engage people who maintain that trauma. Don't engage people who will continue to traumatize you. You purify them out of your space. That's step number one. Step number two, and let's see, step number one is on page 104. Step number two is on page 125. In terms of September 11, conscious reflection on September 11, 2001. So instead, because a lot of people, when you bring up September 11th, it becomes an emotional thing. They don't necessarily deal with it intellectually. Because what happens is you say September 11th, and now all the trauma starts coming up, and they start. And a lot of times, people, they get very emotional. Sometimes I've seen people start to cry. I've seen people even start yelling and screaming, and they're getting upset at someone because they have a different view of what happened on September 11th. Why are people doing that? It's not intellectual. It is really the trauma of the event surfacing, the psychological trauma surfacing, the subconsciously embedded trauma surfacing, and therefore people react in a very emotional way. Okay, the subconscious mind deals with emotions. Your intellect, or in terms of your conscious mind, it deals with intellect. Okay, so make sure you engage in conscious reflection on September 11th. Think about what happened consciously. Think about what was lost too, because there is a mourning that needs to take place that will help with the healing process of the trauma. But think intellectually, think consciously. Engage in conscious reflection in terms of September 11th. With any other trauma in your life, the same thing applies. Consciously reflect on that trauma. Think about it critically. Think about it intellectually. That doesn't mean that you don't pay tribute to your emotions that you feel, but don't be overrun with the emotions, because oftentimes when people bring up September 11th, they're so emotional about it that they can't intellectualize it. They won't see the pattern emerging. They won't see the manipulation. All they do is they feel the trauma, and they don't know what to do with it because it's something that is subconsciously embedded. And then the last thing, and I talk about this inside the book, and this is really the most important thing that anyone can do in any area of your life, especially when it relates to subconsciously embedded trauma, and that is to begin to internalize power. You see, the whole system in terms of media manipulation and propaganda, it is designed to cause people to ultimately externalize power. So what happens is traumatize people. Okay, you traumatize people with Sandy Hook. You traumatize people with, you know, the sinking of the Titanic. You traumatize people with September 11, 2001. Okay, trauma. You traumatize people psychologically. You traumatize them, and as a result, people, what? They become fearful. That is the emotional reaction to the trauma. Once people are fearful, and if you can maintain them in a state of perpetual fear, people will begin to externalize power perpetually. Once people externalize power, they're easily controlled. That's the process. So what do we do? What do we do? We begin to internalize power. See, and when you internalize power, when you start hearing these stories about Al-Qaeda threats and so forth, so on, perfectly predictable. I've said this at the conference going back months ago, that you can expect these types of stories. You were there, and I said it live. It's been recorded. I also have videos on YouTube I've been talking about, and on Blog Talk Radio going back 3 years ago, I said you can expect these types of stories. When you intellectualize this, you know what's coming in advance. I have this saying that if you know what is going to happen in advance in the news, is it necessary to be fearful about any of it? No. Why? Because you know what's coming down the line. And if you know what's coming down the line, that means that it's nothing more than a script. And see, once you begin to think on those levels, you now internalize power, because you take the power out of mass media to manipulate you with these fake events. And now you place the power within you, and you can say, look, that event is not going to impact me. I'm not going to succumb to the fear and the fear mongering. And that is a very much empowered place to be on an individual level, but then also as a species. Because of September 11th, for the last 12 years, ladies and gentlemen, not just me, not just you, but the global population have been kept in a state of arrested development via control that is materialized through the manipulation of the psychological condition of the global population. And how was this done? By taking and using the trauma of September 11th and weaponizing it in mass media and triggering trauma to cause people to once again be re-traumatized, experience levels of fear, externalize power, and in the process relinquish their control of their lives. That's how we're being controlled here on planet Earth collectively. It is psychological warfare.
Wow. You know, one of the things that I found interesting in your speech also was the fact that you mentioned that even 9/11 truthers, even in us like sharing videos and sharing information that comes out on Facebook and, you know, all the stuff that the 9/11 truth movement is doing, you said actually plays into this trauma as well. Can you explain more of that, Lennon?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And the reason why, and again, I would propose, you know, anyone ask critical questions about September 11th. Please do, because the official version, it is an insult to human intelligence. Okay?
It certainly is. I totally agree.
And I get so frustrated with that because, I look at the species and I know that we're more powerful than that. I know that to simply accept these fanciful propositions, you know, but it's this global motion picture stage. So we've been trained to accept these types of things just because mass media says so. But I want to say, there's a saying here. Inside of my book, and I talk about this, and I'll just say this real quickly here, and that is that if an individual does not engage in the healing process of any given trauma, when they pursue truth, the pursuit of truth will be based upon subconscious trauma as opposed to intellectual process, because you can't do both. You can't be traumatized and subject to these emotions of fear, but then also be intellectual about any given thing. You have to be able to intellectualize and process information intellectually and go through a logic stream. One of the things that has happened with what people call the 9/11 truth movement is a lot of people, because they haven't healed the trauma, their whole approach to finding the truth is based upon subconsciously embedded trauma. And that's a problem.
Right.
You see, so that's what I'm saying. There's nothing wrong with pursuing the truth, but make sure you're pursuing the truth from a place of healing first. And that's precisely why a lot of people in the so-called 9/11 truth movement, even they, when they begin to talk about September 11th, it becomes an emotional thing. Why does it have to become emotional? I will propose that one of the reasons why it has become emotional is because people have not dealt with the emotional trauma that they experienced on September 11th, 2001. This will say that when I talk about September 11th because I've gone through a healing process, It's not an emotional thing for me. Now, when I talk, I may talk with vigor, but it's not like my heart is racing or I'm getting upset or I'm shaking or anything. That's not it at all, because I've gone through a healing process. And one of the things that has happened in the alternative media, when we talk about the 9/11 truth, the 9/11 truth movement, is that a lot of people, because they haven't engaged in the healing process in the first place, their whole orientation is based upon trauma. And therefore, when they speak about the topic of September 11th, even if they're speaking truth about September 11th, the truth is coming from a place of trauma. And I think we have to be very clear about that if you pursue truth coming from a place of trauma, you will be jaded. Your vision will be jaded as to the truth because you're coming from a place of traumatization. When you come from a place of personal healing, your vision will be clear. You'll be able to intellectualize any given thing conclusively, and therefore your whole approach will be reflective of that degree of intellectualization. Very important. And again, I'm not saying not to look at the alternative version. In point of fact, I'm saying you should. Okay, please do. I'm begging you to. But in the process, don't make sure you're clear that you are not, that your emotions, and make sure that your trauma is not guiding that process. Your intellect,
right,
your critical thinking should be what guides you in these regards.
Wow, that's brilliant. Yeah, I really like what you're saying. We have like 3 minutes left, so I want you to for sure give everybody again your book title, Lennon, as well as your two websites where everybody can find you.
Yes, absolutely. So my book title is The 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program. You can find it on my website, LennonHonor.com. You can go to LennonHonor.com/the digits 911. Okay, LennonHonor.com/911. My name is Lennon Honor, LennonHonor. My websites are LennonHonor.com, also LennonHonorFilms.com. And I also should mention that I do have a video on the 9/11 fear-based mind control program. I know you mentioned it earlier, but I want to mention it again here, Cynthia. And you can go to my YouTube page, Lennon Honor Films, or you can just type in YouTube or into Google. You can type in 9/11 and global mind control. And that is like a five-hour video where I get into a lot of what I've spoken about here and a whole lot more. And I want to thank you, too, as well, for having me on your show. I really enjoyed my time here with you, and I really do appreciate you allowing me to come and speak. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. This is a brilliant way to look at it and to, you know, kind of distance yourself from the whole story by actually seeing that this is a script. This is like a Hollywood script that plays out with the villain and the hero and, you know, the man found in the cave or in the hole or in the drainage pipe or, you know, whatever. It's like such a wild story when you break it down like that. So I really appreciate your brilliance in taking the story and, you know, going back to the G.I. Joe time frame. And, you know, when you first heard this, it's a phenomenal way to actually reframe it and help people have a little bit of distance between themselves and this huge trauma story that they've created for everybody to believe in, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well said. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Lennon. I appreciate you of being on my show. Thank you so much. And thank you, Ruth Ann. Thank you for hosting this.
This is really interesting.
Yes, it rocked. Lennon, you really rocked the show. It was really awesome. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I appreciate y'all, and I appreciate y'all energy, too. Very positive. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.